The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
And it's Friday, end of the week, and we are going to do some really amazing things tonight. I hope you sit back and enjoy. We have lots on tap. We've been doing a lot of work preparing for this, thanks to my webmaster, James, who has put together a whole bunch of material I sent him. I asked him to go through a very rare 8-minute-long black and white video production that was apparently lost. And the copy that's on the internet was found at some kind of a swap meet or a junk sale, something, and somebody uploaded it online. It's a remarkable video. I had James go through the entire thing, and with every new scene, some were actual movie scenes, some were black and white photographs. I had him take a still frame of each one and organize it in sequence from the beginning of the film to the end. You can find that online under guests. We're going to talk about each one of those pictures to some detail or another tonight with one of the most remarkable men on the planet, a truly magnificent historian who has risked his life for years to bring all of us the chance, the opportunity to actually experience and live history as it really happened, not as it is presented in the mainstream media and through the utterly dominated and contrived scholastic criteria that we call education. Harry, are you there?
I'm here.
Now, the last great mystery, perhaps one of the last great mysteries of the war, beside whether or not Germany actually built and constructed 5 atomic bombs, which we now think happened, that's a whole big story, but one of the big ones that remains shrouded in rumor and all kinds of things, everything from advanced German UFOs and ET bases down there now to really not much going on at all. And that's, of course, the Antarctic and the part of the Antarctic, New Schwabenland, that the Germans visited and claimed as their own in 1938 and 39. This is really a fascinating story. Tell us, I'm going to read a little bit here in just a minute, but tell us why this is so particularly interesting to you right now, Harry.
Well, it's particularly interesting because it's a question that doesn't have an answer just yet, and I hate questions with no answers. There's umpty zillion rumors about the Third Reich down there, and this was allegedly where the Spear of Longinus was kept.
Yeah.
Before it was returned to Vienna.
Where it is now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in Vienna now.
Yeah.
But why was it kept in Antarctica? Why were the Germans so interested in Antarctica in 1938? They had a major, major expedition down there in 1938-39. And, you know, we have expeditions to places in Europe. You can get on an airplane, fly there, get a hotel, rent a car, go poke around. South America, same thing, talk to people. You can't do that in Antarctica. You just can't go there so easily. It costs a fortune. And then who do you talk to? There's no local farmers sitting around waiting for you to pop up.
No road signs, no directions, no maps. It's just an awful lot of perennially, forever frozen snow, ice, and occasionally there's some water down there, but not very often. Let me just read this little intro here. At first glance, New Schwabenland doesn't warrant much enthusiasm. Most of it is covered in eternal snow and ice, as I just mentioned, with only a few places that are actually ice-free, mainly around a few hot springs. Yet annexation was an express purpose of the expedition mounted by Germany, led by Captain Richer, R-I-T-S-H-E-R, ordered by Hermann Göring himself. Before leaving, the expedition members received practical advice, believe it or not, from America's Richard Byrd, Admiral Richard E. Byrd, a very heroic and well-known famous explorer at the time. So he actually advised the Germans and got them prepared for this trip to the Antarctic. The German airline Lufthansa lent one of its ships, the Schwabenland, for the expedition, hence the name that was given to the territory. The vessel was a so-called catapult ship, having proven itself as a transporter and postal carrier in the South Atlantic. The Schwabenland had two Dornier aircraft on board, two of them, named Boreas, B-O-R-E-A-S, and Passat. A steam catapult was used in flinging the planes, each weighing at least 10 tons, off the back of the ship. The planes were used for reconnaissance flights over the impassable hinterlands of the heretofore unexplored part of Antarctica and were thus instrumental in the German Antarctic expedition. Each plane could stay in the air for a maximum of 9 hours, and no inland airfields were constructed, so this provided the outer limit for the area to be explored, 9 hours per flight. In total, 350,000 square kilometers were overflown and more than 11,000 photographs taken during the 15 flights. These pictures were used in drawing up a map of the territory, and during the flights and expeditions on foot, hundreds of Nazi flags, German flags, were dropped to symbolize Germany's possession of the territory. Additionally, the foot expeditions, keep that in mind, established a provisory base camp and reported that around the so-called Schirmacher Sea, there existed some vegetation due to the hot springs near the lake. Captain Schirmer was prevented from mounting a second improved expedition by the outbreak of World War II. Or was he prevented? We don't know. What we're going to look at in these still pictures are what the German media was presenting to the German people in movie theaters. We see what they apparently found in the 1938-39 expedition. But what we don't see is what intrigues me. What didn't they show us, Harry? Because of the war and the intrigue and all of that, wouldn't it be logical to assume that whatever they did see and find down there would have been withheld from even the German people?
It wouldn't surprise me, because there's so much that goes on, especially during the wartime, that is kept from everybody. How much, you know, as a kid, I remember seeing the movie Tone News on the weekends and showing what's going on with the American military. But they're not going to show you everything.
No.
Yeah. That's the only that helps the enemy find out what's going on. So you keep things in secret. Then when Germany finally fell, I guess they just didn't feel any real urgency about telling anybody else what they found.
Right.
If anything,
I think if in fact things were found, and we're going to see photographs that prove that things were found, there was an awful lot in 1938 and 39. To encourage the German government to keep these things, and things that we still don't to this day understand, secret. I don't see any other reason that that shouldn't have happened. I'm not trying to drum up conspiratorial fantasies here, but facts are facts, and when you have a major world war on your doorstep, you're not about to reveal everything. It just doesn't happen.
Right. And keep in mind, too, that this was not just done at the drop of a hat. There was a lot of preparation because, as you'll recall, in 1938, this expeditionary force popped up on that island of Trinidad off of Rio, about 1,000 kilometers out into the South Atlantic, where the Brazilian Navy pulled their people off the island. And 1 week later, the Schwabenland and all her support ships showed up, and that's when they built those two 80-meter high radio towers and put up a base camp there. So this was not something that was small potatoes. They had done a lot of pre-planning, and as I've said before, when Brazil took their navy off the island, they only had a few dozen people there, you know, to show possession and that they had 200-mile radius of fishing. When they pulled the people off the island, the Schwabenland expedition arrived about a week later. Well, they didn't just get there from Germany in a week. So, in my opinion, this had been arranged with the Brazilian government.
Oh, I agree. So the Schwabenland, the expedition, the major ship, and we have video that we can look at of old black and white film taken by a photographer or more than one photographer sent along to record and memorialize the expedition to the Antarctic, which shows at least one and two, we believe, German U-boats accompanying the Schwabenland down there. Now, why would they send U-boats down there? Very interesting. And the footage showing life on board was is just remarkable stuff. I'll put both these videos up tonight or tomorrow, and you'll be able to look at them. But they're real discoveries. They're really fascinating, and they show things that I just am enthralled and intrigued with. Harry is so intrigued. Can you tell us about what's coming up here?
Well, I can tell you a little bit about it, but I'm probably going to come off sounding like some kind of an idiot because there's a lot of stuff that I can't divulge just yet, but we're putting together an expedition down there. We've got a couple of members who are very powerful attorneys. They're going to be drawing up any agreements we have with the people that go there about a non-disclosure. We've also got a couple volunteers who are medical doctors and also pilots. I mean, the doctors are pilots. Guys who are former yacht captains, another fellow is a pilot with over 15,000 hours in things up to and including 757.
Wow.
We have gotten thumbs up from the Danish government and the and their people because they're the ones that control Queen Maud land down there. Danish or Norwegian? Mm-hmm. Oh, God, I hope they're not listening. I sound really, really dumb there. But and there are others who we think are going to be on board. I'm going to Europe in about 3-4 weeks to meet with these people. And once I've met with them and we have got our ducks in a row a little better, then
right,
I can tell you more about that.
Very good. All right. Well, as time approaches, we'll get into it. And we're hoping that when Harry's down there on the expedition, we'll be able to get him on the air here live with a satellite uplink. I think we should. They have communications. They'll not be out of range. So we're looking forward to that potential, too.
Yeah. when I'm in Europe also, I can give you a number where you can call me. Of course, that'll be 3 o'clock in the morning, German time. Can't tell you how excited it'll be to be on the radio at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Well, we'll catch you early, so the jet lag is still there, and you'll be able to operate at that hour.
Yeah. I have no problem, because there's always something to do over there in Europe. You find a little cafe after I get off the radio with you. I go out and have some coffee and sweet rolls. They got great pastries over there. And ice cream, too. Let me pitch that in. They got great ice cream over there.
I think the way you live your life should be inspirational to people. It's, you have fun. You enjoy things. I mean, you're not afraid to do. You just do it. And you don't overdo it. You just do it, and you have a good time. And this is part of the whole issue of going on a trip with Harry Cooper and Shark Hunters. Is a once-in-a-lifetime experience that you'll never duplicate again, and there is still opportunity to engage in these expeditions. They're extraordinary.
Right. We're going to, in September, we've got another tour coming up to Germany and Austria, and anyone can come along if they like. We'll be touring some of the sites of the Third Reich in Munich. Then we're going up to Nuremberg to go to places that some places where anybody can go to, other places where it says Eingang verboten, which means shark hunters are welcome here, and then down to southern Austria where we meet with hundreds and hundreds of veterans, German veterans of the war, and we are, two evenings, fellowship evenings with them, and one afternoon where we're the guests of the Austrian Navy League.
Uh-huh.
And then the Sunday is the memorial on the mountain where they remember everyone who fell in battle, no matter what uniform, no matter what flag, anyone who fell in battle is remembered there. And to the best of my knowledge, it's the only memorial ceremony like that in the world where they remember everybody, friend, foe,
sure,
whatever.
Never heard anything else like it. Nothing. It's truly a once-in-a-lifetime thing. History will come alive for you. You'll go places that you can't even imagine. There is so much there that has yet to be found and explored in Germany and Poland and all over the place.
Oh, yeah, without question. So, you're walking in the footsteps of history when you come on our tours. Your listeners can go to sharkhunters.com and then click on tours and get all the information. If they want to go with us, they can come with us. We're, happy to have them.
Okay, very good. Now, what we'd like to do is just to recap. Harry Cooper is going down an expedition to the Antarctic to try to find some remnants, some relics, maybe some really amazing things. Keep in mind also that as we talk about things tonight, that in 1946-47, Admiral Byrd, the same Admiral Byrd who briefed and prepared the German expedition, helped them in 1938 before the war, led an American military task force to the Antarctic. Why? No one to this day will talk about it. It is a secured topic. It's classified. When Admiral Byrd went down there with an aircraft carrier, many support ships, over 5,000 men, he met something. And a submarine. He met some resistance. He met something that literally caused him to retreat and leave in a hurry. They went around the Cape, Cape Horn, is it?
Cape Horn is at the bottom of South America.
Okay. He went around the bottom and held a news conference. I think it was in Chile, was it?
I'm not sure.
Okay, he did hold a news conference down there, and he made some very provocative statements, which maybe we'll bring up in our two-hour session with Harry tonight. But there was clearly something going on down there. This was not a cheap thing. It was after the war, and they put their best men and best equipment on the high seas, and Admiral Byrd led them down there. Not to say
it was supposed to be a mapping expedition, if
that's
I remember
right.
correctly.
That was the cover story. It didn't work. Now, the ship, Schwabenland, lent by Lufthansa for the expedition, had a catapult on the back. and I figured out the airplane issue. There is a two-engine pusher-puller seaplane, Dornier, and then there's a four-engine seaplane with a twin tail. There were two planes on that ship, and they were both using the catapult to be launched. When they came back to the ship, it would simply land on the ocean, taxi up to the back, and a large crane would pick them back up and put them on the deck. That's how it worked. And they made many, many trips. It's fascinating stuff. We're going to look at that tonight. Have you had people come forward who were involved in this expedition? Because there is a documentary on YouTube which shows conversational clips with the gentleman, at least one of them, who was the film shooter down there. He recorded the whole thing in 16mm black and white film. And we think some color film as well. But he's in this documentary, which was only released about 6-8 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, there may be people alive who remember. I don't know.
Right, yeah. I was just going to say Germany had a lot of color film. They had color film in general use much earlier than we did. And a lot of Eva Braun's home movies were in color. A lot of combat footage is in color. We had a member for many, many years who was a petty officer on board that submarine, the USS Senate. And
in the Bird Expedition high jump?
Yes, yes. And, of course, I asked him what was going on. He didn't know anything, and I'm sure that's exactly the case, because a petty officer, all he knows is how to handle his crew on board a submarine or a ship, whatever. He doesn't get the overview of the expedition. But now, within the last 4, 5, 6 months, I guess it was, we learned that another one of our members, who's a very valued member and a great guy, has been with us a long, long time, just found out that he was the executive officer on board that submarine down there.
Oh, he would have known.
Yes, and he's not clamming up. We've gotten information already from him. they had a little problem with the ice and beat up their propellers and had to be towed by another one of the ships for repairs. And so I just sent him an email about 4 or 5 hours ago with more questions. And I'm sure he's not going to lie to me. If there's something that he's obligated not to say, he'll tell me that he can't talk about it. But I haven't gotten the reply back from him yet.
So that's pending.
The war,
That's pending. You're waiting.
Yes. Yeah. I'm sure the man's not sitting by his computer waiting for my emails to come in. He'll look, every so often, and
sure,
he'll answer them. He's a great guy, and he was executive officer on board the USS Barb during the last three patrols of Barb. And, of course, we met him through Admiral Flucky, who was one of our members and was on our board. So he does still remember what went on. Now, how much he is allowed to say, I don't know. We'll find out.
Well, I like the idea of hearing from any of these people. I can't talk about it. That works for me. That's okay. That opens the door to all kinds of possibilities.
Exactly. But at least that way you know that there's a topic there and they won't lie to you.
Yeah, very good. All right, now keep in mind that as we go through our pictures and talk with Harry, we're going to discuss this in a very casual way. We're going to look at it much the way you'll be looking at it. We don't have facts. We have images and what those images create in each of our minds and imaginations. And some of them are just stunning. Will be up to us to determine. Remember, two planes on the ship, the New Schwabenland, covered 350,000 square kilometers, overflown 15 flights, in which over 11,000 photographs and movie film were taken. Amazing. All right, be right back. Hang on. Okay, welcome back. Yours truly with Harry Cooper, SharkHunters.com. Without question, one of the world's greatest historical organizations. And I hope all of you consider joining. You'll get a monthly magazine. There is a library of DVDs and books there that is just knock your socks off. And certainly most prominent, perhaps among all of these great books, Hitler in Argentina by Harry Cooper. The book that really tore the cover off the lie that Hitler and Eva Braun died in the bunker in April 1945. Didn't happen, folks. No way. Look at the book, buy the book, read the book, and then think, and you'll come up with the right decisions. I mean, the evidence is growing all the time, thanks to Harry. It is overwhelming. And we have pictures, photographs of the house that they occupied for 10 years or thereabouts. It's all in the book, Hitler in Argentina. It is a must-read for you if you care at all about the truth of our planet and our history. Okay, we're going to ask you to load up those pictures. If you have, great. If you haven't, go to guests@rents.com and load up photos under Harry Cooper's name, and we're going to start taking a look at those in a minute. Now, the expedition to the Antarctic, Harry, is scheduled approximately for what time frame?
November, December this year.
All right, that's going to come real fast. So
that's my biggest concern. It's coming up real fast.
Yeah. Well, vote for Trump before you leave.
Yeah, he's got 3 votes coming out of this family.
There you go. Well, I hope he has a hell of a lot more. He's already pulling away from that wretched bitch. Excuse me, but that's what she is.
The one he calls Crooked Hillary?
Yeah. I wonder what he calls her off camera. Look, the woman is just not quality. She's not appropriate for this country in any public position. The way she covered up for her rapist, criminal, felon husband is unforgivable. No woman should vote for her simply because she's a woman. She is one of the worst examples of the feminine gender that this country has ever produced in modern times.
I don't know about your part of the world, but all around this part of Florida, we're seeing campaign signs in people's front yards, you know, with her logo and everything on it, only it says Hillary for prison 2016.
Wonderful. Good to hear. Now, these people down there, a lot of folks who are a little older, they remember, they've watched, they've learned. Younger people just don't get it, and I can't fault them for it. They didn't live then.
Right.
But this is good to hear. All right, it's been my statement and my projection that when the campaign begins in earnest, the national presidential campaign between Trump and Hillary, he is going to just shred her. And then if she's indicted, of course, she's gone. She may try to bring Bernie Sanders on as her VP to pick up his support base, but I just can't see Bernie doing it. At least I would hope not. But we'll
I don't
see.
Think so. I think there's too much acrimony between those two, and you got to love Bernie. I wouldn't vote for him, but he's like that mosquito that she can't swat. He just won't go away.
That's
he's
funny.
Driving her nuts, and she's got a two-front war going on, whereas Trump can point all his guns in her direction, figuratively speaking, guns, and she's having to attack Trump and Bernie. So I think it's great. I think the Republican convention is going to go fairly smoothly, where if there's any upheaval at all, it's going to be in the Democratic side because we're seeing already a lot of unrest.
I think the Republican convention is probably going to be, without question, the most unique in GOP history. Trump is planning to make it special. He's going to put his touch on it, and I think that augurs very well for those who want to watch and participate. Okay,
in interesting times, that's for sure.
My goodness. Think of it. Think what you've seen, Harry. World War II as a little kid, and now where we are. This is the most astonishing acceleration in history.
Yeah. As a comparison, you know, we live out here in the woods, out in hillbilly heaven, and we just had a new YMCA grand opening today. And I was there, and I remember I learned to swim at the Y, and when I lived in one of the suburbs of Chicago, I'd ride my bike to the 2 blocks to where I'd get the bus, lay my bike up against the side of the IGA store. I'd ride the bus three towns over, transfer, take another bus, two more towns to the Y. I was 12 years old. I went all alone. You can't let a kid do that nowadays.
No, and the bike was still there when you got back, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. And that was, you know, like 3, 4, 5 months every Monday through Friday, 5 days a week. That's the bike was still there. Nobody would touch anything.
That's amazing. Well, that's what made this country what it was, and that's why we want to see it made great again. And there is one man who can really move in that direction in a very powerful and formidable way, and that's Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's an ass-kicker, and he really doesn't need to be politically correct. And I don't have $10 billion like he does, but I'm pretty much the same way, too. You know, be politically incorrect. Just be accurate. Be honest. Be
just
real.
Be honest. Yeah. That's all. It's very simple. Honesty is a rapidly diminishing and evaporating quality that this country needs so desperately now.
Yeah, that's why I love going to Europe. Those old Germans, they are straight up honest, honorable. You never have to wonder when they say something is something. Believe it.
There must be, and I'll ask you this when you go over there again, there must be among the average Germans of reasonable, intelligent capacity, rage beyond measure at what's been done to that country by Merkel and her communist cronies. Unbelievable.
Well, yeah, and even before Merkel.
Oh, absolutely. Of course. Yeah. No doubt.
And I see now where they just grabbed some 90-something-year-old guy who was a sergeant, and, they've accused him of over 100,000 murders and all that.
Oh, please. Not again.
Pretty soon the sons and then the grandsons. Just something to keep that cash register ringing, you know.
That's exactly what it is. It's a big business.
A lot of that is fantasy anyhow. But I digress.
No, that's all right. We've spent many, many hours over the years on this program explaining that and proving it. It's absolutely a con game, one of the greatest hustles in history. All right, let's look at our pictures. Are you ready?
Back to the pictures, yes, sir.
Can you see them? All right. First picture up is a bow. It's a stern shot. The bow is off to your left of the new Schwabenland.
Right.
Tell us what you see there in the picture.
Well, that's the stern of the catapult ship, which was the flagship of that expedition, 1938-39. And they would catapult the two aircraft. One of them, two split hairs. They were not both seaplanes. The Dornier Whale, with the push-pull, that was a flying boat because it lands with the belly of the aircraft in the water.
Uh-huh.
Whereas the other one, the four-engine, that's a seaplane because it had floats. Okay, split hairs. But at any rate, they'd fire these, they'd catapult these aircraft, and from what we've learned, they'd fly down what is the border of what Germany was claiming as Neues Schwabenland, and every 1 kilometer, they would drop what they call a spear. You'll see pictures of it later on in your photo array. And it was about roughly five and a half feet long, I believe, stainless steel, with an enlarged top. And on the flat top, there was a swastika emblazoned.
Yeah.
And every 10 kilometers, they would drop one that was 2 meters long that had a metal swastika flag on it. To show, I guess, that this was the area that Germany claimed. Now, they've dropped tens of thousands of these things, allegedly. Where are they? Did some entity go through there later on and pick them all up? You can't get them all.
Are they covered up with snow?
There's a good possibility there, too, because I don't know if there's a great similarity between the Arctic and the Antarctic, but remember there was all those P-38s that landed on, what was it, Iceland, I guess?
Greenland, and I think. Well, one
Greenland,
or the other.
Whatever it was. Through the years, they settled and settled and settled, and they were a long way underneath the snow cover when they finally were pulled out, so who knows? But
amazing what one of those would... That would be something to grace your mantle. Wow. Piece of history.
Yeah, I'd say it'd be worth a fortune for crying out loud if you could if you could find one and videotape everything that you know, that's another thing we have. One of our members, if we put this together, he said he'll go along. He was a movie star when he was younger, middle age, etc. Now he owns a big production company. His name is Monty Markham. I don't know if that name rings a bell, but
he
if you
used
see
to be
him,
a didn't he used to be an actor?
Right, that's right. The third remake of The Magnificent Seven, which is called Guns of the Magnificent Seven, he's the guy that the townsfolk are about to lynch at the beginning of the film because they said he stole a horse. Also, he was for a while he was on Dallas.
Yeah,
and he always wore a kind of a butternut-colored leather jacket. And on The Golden Girls, he played Blanche's gay brother, which he ain't gay. He and his wife came here to visit. He's married to the same lady for I don't know how many years, which is rare in Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So they were here to visit, 3 years ago, I guess. And he's from Florida. And when we were talking on the phone and made arrangements for him to come here, I said, hey, you know, because he's a big-time movie star. I said, hey, you know, I don't want you to have any misconceptions. I just live in a plain old house out in the woods somewhere. And he's not ostentatious at all. He says, hey, Harry, when I was growing up in Palm Beach County, he said, we lived 2 miles past where the pavement stopped. And he said, my grandmother had pigs in a pen out behind the house. You'd go whack the pig, and now you got dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So he's not ostentatious, down-to-earth guy, but he said if we have a major expedition, he'll come along with all the filming equipment and everything. So we're covering our bases.
So he's going to go?
If we get this put together properly, yep.
Wow.
Yes.
I remember Monty Markham. I think a lot of people do, sure. This is very nice. Very nice to hear. You're going to get more and more support. I know that this country that we live in, that we call our own, of course it's owned by others, has been involved with a lot of stuff down there. People don't know that there were 3 nuclear explosions that we set off in the Antarctic. Now, why? Why would we go down there and do that when we had all of this land in Nevada that they were using for underground nuclear tests? Why would they light 3 of them off in the Antarctic? Doesn't make sense. Unless they were trying to wipe something out.
Answer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there were 3 nuclear explosions.
Maybe they were trying to get rid of the penguins. I don't know.
I don't think so. Yeah, we know about the all the stories about German anti-gravity craft discs, if you will, UFOs, flying saucers. There's much about that down there, and I don't have any hard data. Just can't tell you. All I can
do
is
say. Well, that's the problem.
Enjoy.
The hard data is next to impossible to get.
Yeah,
and I know we've many of us have read what is purported to be Admiral Byrd's diary.
Right.
In which that he was caught in a tractor beam sort of thing, and his plane was brought down. Green meadows, warm lakes, et cetera, and scientifically far advanced people. Now, is this true or not? We don't know. This area is not only shrouded in mystery, but it's also shrouded in misinformation and disinformation, which is a normal spook tactic. If you want to keep something secret, you not only keep it secret, but you release all sorts of other stories that have people going in many directions at once, and nobody knows exactly what they're doing.
No. All right, very good. Let's go back and look at the ship Neuschwabenland in action. Second picture you'll see is of the Dornier, or Dornier. How do you pronounce it in German?
Dornier. I think it was a French name.
French company, I think. Dornier. Or a French name, anyway. All right, there's the smaller of the two planes being catapulted off the back of the ship.
That's got the push-pull, pusher-puller of engine in front and back.
On top of the wing, yeah.
Yes. Yeah, well, so many aircraft that are either seaplanes or flying boats, they keep the engines high to try to avoid the spray.
Of course, you don't want salt water going in there, particularly.
Yeah.
Now, picture number three is very interesting. It's from the film. You can see the film, by the way. It's linked at the top of the picture set. Stills from the film, and you'll see a URL there. This film has, as you noticed, some color stills. Now, remember, James took these off the film. He froze the video and extracted the still frame for us to look at tonight. But there was color film taken down there. This man, apparently, and I don't speak German, but he is apparently the man who went on the trip as an older gentleman, remembering what it was like and describing it in this particular film, which you'll see. And I think that's him. Okay. Number four is I believe this is a computer enhancement or a computer construction of the Dornier, or the Dornier. Whatever you want to pronounce it is fine. It doesn't matter. That's the pusher-puller. You can see the puller on the front, the prop, and at the back of that square rectangular box is the pusher prop.
Right.
Is that? Do you think that's a photograph of the actual plane? It might be.
It looks like.
It's awfully damn good.
Yeah. Well, the Germans had great photo equipment.
Well, their optics, the Zeiss optics. Think of the optics and the lenses and all that, sure.
Exactly. Many, many years ago, I was a project manager at a place called Vero Military Systems, and we were making lenses for the infrared night vision before Starlight came along. All our technicians in there in the laboratory making the lenses, they were all Germans.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
And they came out with some incredible lenses for our guys in Vietnam in the infrared and in the Starlight scope, mm-hmm. night vision.
Mm-hmm. Which is now in its third or fourth generation, the best said to be made by the Russians at this point. Probably the heritage of German scientists who went there or were captured and taken there after the war.
or maybe some of the stuff that Bill and Hillary sold in exchange for donations to the Clinton Foundation.
You got it. Okay, here's
probably costing you a whole bunch of viewers every time I say stuff like that.
It's if they leave because they don't like the truth, then that's fine. Okay, the next image is a map of New Schwabenland, really, which represents only a very small portion of the Antarctic. It's colored in there. You can follow and trace around to the left and the right the actual boundaries of the Antarctic. We know now that under the ice cover, the ice cap is at ground level, shall we say, where the actual ground would have been. There are bacteria. There are all kinds of instances and evidences of life that used to be when this was not a frozen wasteland at one point. So it's a very interesting location. These three atomic blasts down there have always intrigued me, and I've got to do some more research on that at some point. The next image is very interesting. It's a color picture of a large, roundish lake in the Antarctic. Mm-hmm. Now, you say, well, what the heck is going on here? How can that be? Has to be volcanic heat in some way that has melted away or doesn't allow the ice to form. This is, I assume, a perfectly clean, clear, freshwater lake.
And it looks like there's next to no snow on the ground there either.
Right. No, none. So there may be a lot of heat in the area. I don't know. Maybe you'll be able to find this location and get to it. But do remember, the Germans didn't just fly over the Antarctic. They had a base camp. They made a number of foot expeditions, and when you see what's coming up, don't look ahead in the pictures. Don't spoil it. Wait.
Don't read the back page of the book.
No, don't do that. Just hang on, because it's a remarkable place down there.
There are warm water lakes, we're told, near the Russian base down there.
Uh-huh.
I forget the name of it, the Volga base or the Vostok base or... I don't have my computer up right now for that. So there are warm water lakes down there, and Why? Well, let's find out.
Yeah, let's go look. The idea of a ground camp, do we have any records of the actual expedition down there, Harry, that you can look at in terms of plotting locations, where they were, where they went? Has any of that come forward? The Germans kept such meticulous records on everything. Somewhere there are those records. Maybe they're hidden away, and excuse me, in that warehouse where the Ark of the Covenant and other things are kept.
Yeah, they're in Washington, D.C. or somewhere nearby. I don't know. The Germans kept meticulous records. But maybe these records are squirreled away somewhere by the victorious Allies, or in the case of, they used to have the Tornwache, and they'd have the Deutsche Wachenschau movies that they showed. They had a massive, huge archive underneath Tempelhof Airport in a sealed room. A huge, huge warehouse, and some knothead fired a bazooka in there after the war was over. And, of course, being silver nitrate film, once it lit up, they couldn't put it out for a week, and it burned, hundreds of thousands of hours of film that would have told us all sorts of wonderful things, except went up in smoke because some junkhead fired a bazooka in there after the war was over.
Those kinds of things make me sick. Anybody who loves history would
young,
be sickened by that.
Young guy, feeling the excitement and all that,
Let's blow it up. I don't know what it is about our species. We like to blow things up.
I know.
Especially men. Not you gals, but the men do. All right, let's scroll down to the next picture after that remarkable shot of that round. It looks green in here. It may be greenish. Clear water, obviously. One wonders how warm that might be. There's nothing around that lake but little patches of snow.
We'll see if we can't find out. You might get a picture of me swimming in that lake or one like it.
That's fine
hopefully.
With me. Let's do it. I really want to tell you that I am more than impressed that you're doing this. And it just everybody involved with it is to be commended most highly. This is an extraordinary gathering of people. With their same intentions to find out what we can about what the Germans may have been doing or what they may have found down there. We also know that the Germans were astonishingly fast at constructing in Europe underground tunnels, underground manufacturing centers, and these were huge, and they did it in no time at all. Yes, they used slave labor, captured Soviet troops, captured people from other countries and so forth. That's the downside of it. But what they did with their discipline was nothing less than phenomenal. And what might they have done in South America in 4 or 5, 6 years? They might have done much the same thing. They could have easily built huge underground facilities down there.
Yeah, they were down there more than just 4 or 5 years. They were down there in 1936. There was a major expedition on the Amazon, and they did a film on that. And back to the name Monty Markham, 20, 30 years ago, he had an expedition way up at the top of the Amazon, probably somewhere in the area of Manaus, which was the rubber capital of the world back in those days. And he came across a cemetery that had 2-meter-high crosses there over the graves, and they all had swastikas on them, and they all were, the people had all died in 1936. They were part of the expedition. I guess maybe they ran into some kind of disease or so, but they had a huge expedition down there in 1936.
Yeah, they were just amazing what they were doing.
All
right, stand by.
One of our members, who's now gone, Erich Gimpel, he was allegedly a radio technician working for Telefunken down there a couple of years before the war. Well, that means he was a spy down there, and he was a spy during the whole war. And he was one of the two guys dropped off at Frenchman's Bay, Maine, in November 1944 to sabotage. Yeah, he was one of the two.
Mm.
He was a member of Shark Hunters. He was a good friend of mine. And after he got caught, and after the war was over, he was released. He went where all good German spies go, South America.
Yeah.
And we're still in good contact with his daughter.
Very nice. All right, stand by. We have to take a break. We'll come right back and continue. Don't look ahead on the pictures now. Stand by. We'll take you there when we come back in just a few minutes.